Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Today is Tuesday, and that means we start off with citrus. Joining me on the phone today, Certified Crop Advisor Dustin Stewart with UltraGrow.
Hi, Dustin. And once again, thank you for taking a few minutes out of your day to talk about citrus with us. I wanted to do a check-in and see how the crop is looking and see what you're hearing out there.
Well, driving around the fields right now, it's just that time of year where you kind of see the fruits of your labor coming through. So, with the rain event that we had, was that last week? There was the citrus was going to have a big size increase occur because of that. So driving around, especially in Mineolas this year, I'm seeing a lot of splits. And so it's a good time to reflect on what we did in 2021 through bloom and petal fall and just the nutritional inputs that we put in throughout the year. Now is the time when we're driving through the fields, we can kind of see those things. Did it work or did it not? Did I do enough? And so, splits being a thing I saw this morning, it just kind of makes me think back to that petal fall time. How much calcium did I put out? How much potassium did I put out? What type of seaweed was I using? Those are very important that time of year to help with the cell wall integrity, the cells that are developing at that, and it sets them up to be prepared for this type of rapid growth, so you have the elasticity and the rind to be able to accommodate what it just went through. We had this a few years ago, probably 4 years ago. We had a rain in September that just wreaked havoc on everybody. So I was seeing some of that, seeing some sunburn. That's starting to pop up because we're starting to see on the early fruit, you're getting the color break in this area in Tulare County. So sunburn starting to show. So I started thinking, and this was on Mineolas again. I thought, we didn't have Mineolas on the sunburn protection products of the crop shield this year. That's something I'm going to be talking about the grower, at least getting in 2 to 3 months, this hottest time of the year. If we don't have the budget to go through the entire field, we're definitely going to be looking at bordering at least, because I think the return on doing those type of applications is going to be there. Just to kind of keep with that theme of where we're at off of the work that we've done, if you haven't already gotten your tissue results back, most people have. I'm looking at those too, looking at my nitrogen levels, my phosphorus, potassium on down the line. And it's just a good point, make note, do I have the nitrogen I need to get through the rest of the year? So that's telling you, did I do enough early on? Because we had to cut that off right around that June window. So there's a lot of things like that to look at, take note of, and change your game up going into the 2022 season that could really help out your bottom line.
I think that it's fantastic that you're talking about looking at your crop right now and taking note of what was done right or what could be improved and what you want to change for next year. And this is exactly the right time to do it. It's not the time, again, maybe people who don't understand so much about agriculture think, they're not growing anything right now, or they don't need to be worrying about anything right now. It looks beautiful on the trees. But this is the time to really be out there taking notes of what's going on so you know what to do next year, right?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
And so you mentioned quite a few things that growers should be watching for. Anything else that we've left out or anything that you think they should be keeping in mind as we head into the months ahead?
Yes. Yeah, so right now, the guys with the early fruit, their windows are very, very small to get it off and get it to market. Otherwise, they miss out entirely. So like if we're looking down in the Edison-Arvin area, the fruit is actually making sugars, the bricks are where they need to be. They don't have the color. So there are products out on the market. The one we carry is called 34 Super K. You spray on something like that, and within a couple of days, you will have the color that you're looking for. So it kind of hurts to go through and do a foliar this time of year, but you could be missing the window entirely. So there are products out there that are proven and can help you get that color to, and also if you don't have the bricks, it'll bring the bricks. If you've got the color, it's also very good for sizing. So there are things you can do to help with that, and you can be assured that this is going to work. You're going to see the difference. And you know, those products are running the $25 range per acre for the product plus application, but I mean, it's better than not picking.
And of course, if people want to, you know, get a little bit extra, another eye on what's going on, they can call you or their crop advisor and set up a time.
No, absolutely. Anytime. You can get a hold of us at UltraGrow. We have a team. Our teams go from Mexico up to the Oregon border over to the coast. So feel free to give us a call. My number is 559-994-0291. And I myself, my agronomist, and, you know, whoever else is in the area, we come down, take a look at the field, you know, pull some tissue soils and give you our best opinion of what we can be doing out there. So just wish everybody the best.
All right, perfect. I think we got it all, unless you can think of anything else.
I think that's it. You know, the only other thing that we have is water right now, and that's something everybody needs to be taking a look at. How can we, the limited amount of water that we're getting this time of year, I'm starting to see some orchards, you know, with that are just dependent on groundwater with well issues. Look at your humic acid. I mean, there's some other stuff out there we can do to kind of retain the limited amount of water that we get to put out. And that's going to be very, very crucial, not only this year, but next year, especially going through winter irrigations, the sodium accumulation in the soil. Those are things we really need to keep an eye on and make best use of our irrigations and applications to keep everything going in the right direction.
Thank you again to Dustin Stewart. Our news brief is coming up next. We will be right back.
Network with the top tier of the industry at this year's California Trina Conference, featuring presentations from the top executives from CDFA and California's tree nut commodity boards. Register at WCNGG.com, and we'll see you in Tulare on November 3rd at the California Tree Nut Conference. Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Welcome back. Here's your news brief for today. A quarterly report from CoBank suggests that the U.S. economy is still very much in the grips of the pandemic. Supply chains are arguably in the most dire condition since the start of the pandemic, as lead times for manufacturing inputs recently reached record highs. Persistent supply chain disruptions and labor shortages are adding significant costs to businesses and consumers. Some USDA-related workers are fearful they could be forced out of their positions because of USDA's COVID-19 workplace safety plan. Ashley Davenport shares more.
The plan was released nearly 3 weeks ago and requires all USDA employees to be fully vaccinated by November 22, 2021. USDA County Committee members who have been elected to their positions, like Charlie Mintz, are also required to get vaccinated.
I find it quite disheartening, and from my understanding, as all employees that fail to become vaccinated are terminated and lose their retirement and benefits.
Mite serves as the chair of the Menominee, Dickinson, and Iron County FSA Committee in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. He was elected to the position in 2018. He's concerned of the ripple effects if enough people are terminated from their local positions because of USDA's plan.
If the local offices lose enough people to the relinquishment of positions, the state office will take control over the local segment then. You would lose the local perception of the area and where the assistance is needed and how the effects of any problems within local farms and understanding the conditions that exist within the area to implement programs.
However, this sentiment is not expressed on a federal level. When posed with this worry, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says that FSA workers did a, quote, extraordinary job providing assistance to producers during the pandemic. He expects them to continue to do so despite Mainz's concerns.
I'm confident that regardless of the challenges that that folks may confront at any point in time during this pandemic, that we're going to get the work done. Because we understand and appreciate how important it is for farmers and ranchers and producers that we do our job. We also think it's important that we continue to maintain compliance with the CDC guidelines in terms of making sure that those who work in these offices are as safe as they can possibly be. And we know, but I'm not overly concerned that we're not going to get the work done because people step up. That's what we do at USDA. We step up when we have to.
I'm Ashley Davenport.
The American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Society for Minorities in Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Related Sciences announced an agreement to increase minority involvement in agriculture. The group signed a moratorium of understanding for collaboration on projects. The projects include written consent for each organization's publications, providing leadership training and expertise, as well as cross-promoting programs and events. Funding for conservation projects with an aspect of USDA's Regional Conservation Partnership Program was recently announced. Details from Rod Bain in this report.
The focus for projects in the recent round of specific USDA Regional Conservation Partnership Program funding awards.
A majority of these proposals, we engage the historically underserved producers.
As well as climate smart agriculture and forestry, according to Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Terry Cosby. The funding comes from an aspect of RCPP known as alternative funding arrangements.
Through this, partners are given a greater liberty to manage these projects and the relationship with the landowners. Their lead partners, they're responsible for contracting directly with these eligible landowners, and they work directly with the farmers and other landowners and partners. They're actually go out and put these practices on the ground, and a lot of time it gives them a way to be innovative.
As for the breakdown for alternative funding arrangement investments,
we are awarding nearly $75 million and 15 unique partner-led projects. And these projects, they address natural resource concerns on private land, and 70% of the land in this country is under private ownership. And that's where we really concentrate and have the biggest bang for the buck is getting on private land and working with these producers.
Chief Cosby offers examples among the 15 RCPP AFA projects, such as
climate action and reforestation in northern Michigan,
which could serve as a large-scale reforestation project on private lands, with partners reporting on various environmental outcomes, such as sedimentation and nutrient loading. Another project,
enhancing Hawaii's forest for climate resiliency,
focuses on landscape-level forest restoration, with locations selected for the highest potential of carbon sequestration. A third project funded by RCPP Alternative Funding Arrangements,
expanding soil health,
is a South Dakota-based effort to utilize climate-smart agricultural practices such as no-till and cover crops while developing carbon markets to incentivize such efforts.
We're looking at all type of landscapes. We're looking all across this country, and there's a lot of different groups that want to work with us to work with landowners out there to get conservation on the land.
More details about NRCS's Regional Conservation Partnership Program are available at this web address, www.nrcs.usda.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
With the holidays set to begin in just over a month, word from Christmas tree growers is there should be enough real Christmas trees for everybody who wants one. But Shal Landgren, Oregon State University Christmas tree expert, says there probably won't be a surplus this year.
Well, I don't think, at least speaking for Oregon and Washington, I don't think we're going to have any more trees than last year.
So Landrin says don't take Christmas trees availability for granted.
Well, I think it'll be a very good year for growers. I think the statement that everyone that wants a tree will find a tree is probably accurate, but I would advise people if they want a tree to get it early, I'd say the day after Thanksgiving or that first weekend after Thanksgiving.
But the overall supply?
We only know after the fact, after Christmas happens in some ways, but I think this is much more of a grower's market than a buyer's market. So prices are going up and demand is really strong.
The market, Landgren says, has changed since the oversupply of a few years ago.
We certainly have fewer growers. And there's fewer big growers, so there's fewer trees overall. The numbers have been going down in terms of supply.
Oregon is the nation's leader in Christmas tree production, followed closely by North Carolina. That's your news for today. We will be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
We continue with coverage of the House Ag Committee hearing on the state of the livestock industry. During that hearing, Representative Randy Finstra of Iowa asked Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack about competitiveness in the beef industry.
Thank you, Chairman Scott and Ranking Member Thompson, and thank you, Secretary Vilsack, for being here today. There are many challenges today impacting our livestock producers, from African swine fever that we talked about to cyber attacks on the agriculture sector. Also our line speeds, so we have a lot of work to do. But today, I want to focus my questions on cattle market reform. For months, I've been calling on the Agricultural Committee to hold a hearing to examine anti-competitive behavior in the beef industry. I continue to hear from cattle producers struggling to break even, and I am glad for the opportunity to express these concerns before the committee today. One of the key concerns from the cattle producers in my district is a lack of transparency in pricing. Since coming to Congress, I've advocated for efforts to ensure true price discovery and allow cattle producers sufficient leverage in cash negotiations. Last month, the White House published a statement on the actions the administration is taking to improve competition in cattle markets. One of these items was that the administration will, and I quote, work with Congress to make cattle markets more transparent and fair, and that the administration, as I quote, encouraged to see bipartisan legislation by Senators Tester, Fisher, Grassley, Wyden, and others to seek to improve price discovery in the cattle markets. Secretary Vilsack, we heard from Senator Grassley today about the need to act on legislation now. It is so crucial. This is an area that has bipartisan support. Can I get a commitment from you to help on bipartisan legislation like what Secretary Grassley and Fisher have proposed, in line with the support of the White House that has been expressed?
Congressman, I think there's no question that we need more information. There are just fewer and fewer negotiated sales, which obviously have an impact on alternative marketing arrangements, and there can be potential for manipulation. We're more than happy to provide help and assistance. Just one caution, that we look for the proper balance, that we don't, as we try to provide greater transparency, we don't necessarily sacrifice the benefits of the existing system in terms of efficiency. I think it's not easy to do. This is not easy to do, but it's important to be aware of the need for greater transparency and also maintaining the efficiency of the current system.
Thank you, Secretary Vilsack. I can simply say that there is a significant monopoly going on with four packers right now, that we have to get down to the bottom of this, and we have to have transparency to make this all work. And as you know from Iowa, there's a lot of independent producers that are getting forced out of their operations, and we simply cannot wait any longer. While Congress continues to do its part, I appreciate USDA's effort to address these issues. In July, USDA announced $500 million to expand meat and poultry processing capacity. I understand the department is currently reviewing comments from stakeholders. Earlier this week, USDA announced another $100 million to increase processing and strengthen the supply chain. Secretary Vilsack, do you know when we can expect to know the eligibility requirements and application window for these funding?
It is my hope that on the $500 million fund that we have a framework in place before the end of the year, and that we start making decisions in the first quarter of 2022.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Do you know when we will have more details about the series of packers and stockyard rulings announced as part of the President's executive order on promoting competition in the American economy?
The goal that I've set in my own mind is for us to get information to OMB potentially by the end of this year on packers and stockyards.
Thank you. Again, all these three are such, there's so much urgency in this. Our independent producers are truly at stake. I appreciate you coming before the committee today, Secretary, and I'm glad to partner with you in restoring fairness in the cattle market. Thank you, and I yield back.
The gentlewoman from the U.S. Virgin Islands, Ms. Plaskett, who is also chair of the subcommittee on biotechnology, horticulture, and research, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for convening all of us today for this important hearing during committee work week. I also want to thank my colleagues for such tremendously informative and thoughtful questions, and to you, Mr. Secretary, for the time that you've been willing to spend with us and really being so well, informing us so much of the work that you are doing since taking the helm once again of the Department of Agriculture. As you are aware, during the previous administration, there were changes that were made in the Economic Research Service Program, as well as in NIFA. Those entities were moved from Washington and sent out into the other parts of the United States. There was great concern that many of us had that the knowledge base, the scientists who had been with that program for a number of years would not make that move as well. And we saw a reduction in personnel and FTEs in those agencies, which of course will impact how those agencies operate. Can you give us an update on if any changes have been made, how you turn and plan on ensuring that those agencies are able to do the output of scientific research that is so critical for the agricultural industry?
Certainly aware of the concern that you raised, and one of the first things we did when I came back into office was to make sure that we use whatever resources we could use to accelerate hiring so that we could fill the vacancies that had occurred as a result of the shift to Kansas City. I believe I'm correct when I say that NIFA has essentially fulfilled its goal of additional staff. I think 110, it comes to mind right now, of folks that NIFA has recently hired to get back to a level where work is getting done. In fact, I think work is getting done even more quickly than it was under the previous administration. And I think ERS has also made some additional hires. I'm not sure if they are yet at the level they need to be, but I know that they have accelerated hiring as well. So I feel a little bit more comfortable about the circumstance and situation because of these new hires.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. I also recognize that the Biden administration, Biden-Harris administration, has made addressing climate change a major part of its agenda. Can you share how new technologies like gene editing in livestock help American farmers and ranchers improve their environmental footprint?
You know, I recently came back from Florence, Italy, after visiting with my counterparts from the G20. And one of the messages that I conveyed on behalf of the U.S. agriculture was the importance and necessity of us continue to embrace innovation and not to necessarily surrender the ability to continue to be productive, notwithstanding the challenges of climate. I was heartened by the response that I got from many of my colleagues recognizing that productivity and innovation and climate response, mitigation, adaption don't necessarily have to be in conflict. You know, gene editing has a tremendous capacity, and I'll just give you an example. You can, and there is research now underway in root systems, primarily of radishes and things of that nature, cover crops, but could potentially be applied to commodity crops, where you expand significantly the capacity of the root system that in turn can store more carbon, which could potentially create an opportunity for American agriculture to do even more than it's capable of doing today in terms of carbon storage and capture. You can potentially, through gene editing, change the photosynthesis formula, if you will, for plants and crops so that they essentially absorb more carbon and convert it into nutrients and convert it into the root system. So there's an unlimited potential here, which means we need to invest more in research, and I'm glad to see that in the budget that's been approved by the House Agriculture Committee, there's an additional resource for this important research.
Well, thank you very much for that. And once again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for convening this meeting. And I also want to thank my colleague, Mr. Baird, for addressing the letter that we were able to get out, working in a bipartisan manner, expressing our concern and the work that is needed in genetic improvements and the hallmark that they have made in agriculture. And thank you for addressing that in your discussion with him. I yield back.
We continue right after this.
Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. Does your crop have iron chlorosis? AgroPlante has a solution for you. Traditionally, chelated iron has limitations that AgroPlante's Iron Force does not. Iron Force, with its EDDHA chelation technology, can turn your plant's iron chlorosis from yellow to green in as little as 15 days, despite unbalanced soil pH and calcareous soils. From organic certified to conventional micronutrients, AgroPlante has the product for you. Call 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplante.com. Network with the top tier of the industry at this year's California Trina Conference. Featuring presentations from the top executives from CDFA and California's tree nut commodity boards. Register at WCNGG.com and we'll see you in Tulare on November 3rd at the California Tree Nut Conference.
Welcome back. We continue now with coverage of the House Ag Committee hearing. Todd Wilkinson, Vice President of National Cattlemen's Beef Association, was a witness at the hearing. Here is his testimony.
Chairman Scott, Ranking Member Thompson, and members of the committee, on behalf of America's cattle producers, thank you for inviting me to testify today. My name is Todd Wilkinson, and I'm currently serving as the Vice President of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Together with my son, I own and operate a cow-calf and feeding operation in South Dakota. Additionally, I maintain a law practice focused largely on ag law. I'm testifying today on behalf of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the U.S. cattle and beef industry's oldest and largest national trade association. Our role at NCBA is to facilitate a policy process that respects differing perspectives, consults informed expertise, allows for robust debate, and ultimately arrives at grassroots policy positions that are representative of the entire industry. It's from this perspective that I offer my remarks. Cattle production is inherently challenging. Even in a good year, the differences between making a profit and a loss depend upon factors outside of the ranchers' and farmers' control. Let me be clear, the past few years have been anything but good. As producers struggle to get by, the large meat packers rake in record-breaking profits, profits that have not been equitably shared with cattle producers. The current marketing situation brought on by COVID, cybersecurity, plant fires, countless other factors have even the most seasoned industry veterans asking for changes. Something has to give. Because the challenges facing our industry are so diverse, it's imperative that policymakers at all levels of the government remain focused on viable and tenable solutions with vast industry buy-in. NCBA is working through these problems and has consistently come back to 4 points. First, price discovery. Adequate negotiated trade volumes are critical to our market's function. Thanks to efforts of producers, negotiated trade volumes are up. Some meat packers, however, have yet to demonstrate a serious commitment to purchasing cattle on a negotiated basis. AMAs are very important to the Fed cattle trade. NCBA supports their continued use as they fit the unique business models of cattle producers. However, equally as important is the price discovery derived from direct buyer-seller negotiations. Second, market transparency. Since the enactment of the Livestock Mandatory Reporting Act, cattle producers have benefited from consistent and timely reports. That is currently up for reauthorization. And as it's up for reauthorization, we ask you to make changes in LMR to increase transparency. Third, processing capacity. Much of the problem in this industry is processing capacity. Currently, there is a serious shortage of hook space. The industry could economically accommodate another 5,700 hooks of daily processing capacity. Help is needed for new independent regional and small producers. Look, we understand supply and demand. The problem is demand is excellent. We're moving record amounts of beef. The issue is the ability to process it. Big supplies forced into a narrow funnel result in the packers exercising too much market control. Finally, market oversight. Markets can only function when all participants play by the same rules, which, while much of the spread between box beef and fed cattle prices can be explained on supply and demand, NCBA called on the Department of Justice to investigate the major packers in June of 2020. The purpose of this request was to ensure that no anti-competitive behavior has taken place. To date, we have not learned the results of that investigation. Our question is, how long does it take to do an investigation? The message I'm here to deliver today is that complex problems rarely have simple solutions. Regardless of the origin of today's problem, it's clear there is no silver bullet. We strongly urge Congress to resist one-size-fits-all policy prescriptions, which may have disastrous unintended consequences. Careful consideration must be given to the risk-reward of enacting market-influencing laws for hundreds of thousands of American ranchers and millions of beef consumers. Lawmakers should adopt a multi-pronged approach to bring relief to cattle producers, transparency to the markets, and resiliency to the supply chain. In closing, Mr. Chairman, it's been a difficult few years for the cattle producers, but this committee's desire to aid our industry has not gone unnoticed.
That is our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.